the reality is they're not really taking a look at their infrastructure from the outside in. They're not really looking at it from an attacker's perspective, not necessarily security focused. So you end up missing major resources that could have a huge impact on what you're creating. It comes down to like these simple things. It's not even things that outside of comprehension either. It's just things that are just outside of focus, you know?
You're listening to KBcast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Ryan O'Kell, Head of Cybersecurity APAC at Waterstones, and today we're discussing the assumptions people have when it comes to IT teams and security. So Ryan, thank you so much for joining. I know that we have chopped and changed this interview several times, so finally we are having the discussion today. So welcome.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me.
So, okay, I want to start with some of the assumptions people have when it comes to IT teams about security. Now, when you and I were sort of going backwards and forwards about the interview, you raised some really great points. And I think it's definitely points that people in our audience would be able to relate to. So yeah, off the top of your head, like just rattle a few things off.
Yeah, there's an assumption that IT teams are consistently following best practice when they're standing environments up or they're making changes throughout the environment, etc. So I think the biggest thing you'll see is that when it comes to IT education, etc., they're not really teaching best practice for security or anything like that. They're teaching how to get the environment up. They're teaching how to use it. They're teaching you to more or less understand it. They're not necessarily teaching security best practice. On top of that, most of the advice that you'd find online, if you're going to stand something up, which like the majority of IT people out there would probably be doing, is, you know, throwing a Google search down. It's the same deal. It's a single task that you're trying to sort. It's you're making a problem go away. It's not, I need to understand what the security implications are of this. While there's change practice and whatnot in place, that seems to be the trend there. I think the other major assumption is that teams actually understand the security implications of their actions. So I think in some cases you'll find professionals who also believe this, whether that's true or not, it's a different story. But the fact of the matter is they haven't really ever performed successful attacks themselves. So they don't have the context on hand of what a successful attack looks like, what it's relying on, and what sort of things they're doing when they're making these sorts of changes. When I'm talking about these changes, things like, you know, exposing services to the internet or what have you. As a result, you can take a look on Shodan or something like that. I think at the moment we've got something like 5.7 million ports open in Australia. While it's not necessarily a bad thing, that's still 5.7 million programs running on Australian servers that are accessible to the entire internet. And I think the biggest thing that drives these assumptions in my head is more or less that your IT teams, they're focused on making operational problems go away and improving the performance of the infrastructure. Their job is to just make sure things are working and stood up, etc. Security is something that was never built into anything that they've learnt so far, at least not very much of, short of like passwords and that basic sort of stuff. I think this assumption here, it drives a bit past just IT people as well, like talking specifically like operational IT people. But it also steps into that developer spaces. So you'll see a similar thing with developers that are creating these applications that are being deployed. But there's this assumption that, you know, developers are real techies. I think it's a huge thing amongst the developer community that, you know, Christmas time, everyone's going to ask me to fix their computer. I'm just going to Google the problems. And the fact of the matter is, like, developers, they're not IT people. IT people, they're not developers. Like, at most, they'll sit around writing some scripts. And conversely, are not security people. Security people also typically aren't IT people or developers, especially ones that have gone through some of the modern education that we've seen in this space. So I think it seems organizations are more or less clumping all of them into this, you know, technology bucket and assuming they're across all the facets of technology. I think that's a fairly common mindset as well, especially when you're seeing the sort of tenure in organizations where you've got executives, et cetera, who have seen business prior to having this abundance of technology and this abundance of things connected to the internet and services, et cetera. So one of the things that I think really drives that as well is that organizations, they will operate for years without major incidents, major cybersecurity incidents, et cetera. So that more or less backs that assumption that the software that's being created is perfect. The infrastructure is constantly evolving, seeing changes, et cetera, is just as perfect. But it's funny because I think it comes down to this question of why now? Where is all this coming from now? Why is cybersecurity a big thing in this last decade? And I think probably just ransomware has really driven it. But ransomware started throwing its head around again in 2013, and then from there it's only escalated. But it's a problem that's telescoping in nature. Like every year you've got more devices being connected to the internet, you've got more people learning more skills like around IT, etc. You've got more softwares being created and updated, you've got more changes happening to environments getting bigger as companies grow, and conversely there's more attackers coming into this space. There's bigger economy around attacking an organization, there's more exploits coming out, and ultimately, now there's more at stake. So it's this snowballing sort of problem. I think that covers the assumptions I think are being made in this space.
Yeah, most definitely. And I understand where you're coming from in terms of like the mindset and also like the pedigree that like devs have versus security people have. If you look at like a traditional developer, for example, like functionality is their role. Their job is not to like, oh, okay, we've got to look at it from a security perspective. So I guess that's where the challenges are, because you've got two different people doing two different functions looking at things completely different. So we need to sort of enable the bridge and the convergence between the both, which has been harder than we would have liked, because again, you're trying to merge two worlds into the one. But I guess it's having these discussions, bringing people on the show like yourself to speak about that, to speak about your insights that you can share with other people that perhaps that they can start to implement. And to go back to your point before around the clumping side of things, so I had the same issue even in like marketing. Everyone's like, marketing is just PR and media and field marketing and digital marketing. They're actually all different. Yeah. And everyone just, you know, lumps all media and PR into the same thing. And when I actually start asking people, and advertising is another one, they're all different. When I start asking people, do you actually know the difference? The answer is no, typically. And I think the same sort of concept of that applies when you think about IT. And I know the exact example you gave around Christmas time, everyone asking, oh, can you help me with this? It's like, I don't know anything about that. I think that people just assume that because we typically, quote unquote, work with computers, that we can solve all the challenges and all the problems. And typically we can't. And now as security is sort of expanding, like you've got way more specialists than I've ever seen before in certain areas that have no idea about other areas. And so I think that's becoming independently more siloed under the security banner because of how rapid the industry is moving and because of the specialization in each sort of area.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I think the more these specializations sort of come out, the more it does sort of silo things. And you're throwing people into these single focuses with these very specific problems that they're geared towards attacking day in, day out. And when you put security into that mix as well, and when their actions suddenly have security implications, then it gets really tricky. I think in your example with the different facets of, say, marketing, PR, et cetera, you don't have like these huge security implications day to day in your role, short of, I don't know, phishing, or you've got a few other interesting things, I imagine, that could cause problems if you weren't performing your role properly. But making a subtle change isn't going to lead to your entire organization being effectively taken offline for a week, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that those are really relevant points that you raise. So I want to sort of dive into, from your experience, what are some of the common items that are like overlooked from an IT team perspective when it does come to security? Because I think this is important, as again, everyone just seems to think, oh, like the sysadmin dude can just do all the security stuff as well. So I guess maybe there needs to be more awareness around roles and responsibilities, and knowing that, again, because of the specialization, the one sysadmin person can't just do everything, especially when it gets to the security side of things.
Yeah, so it's always simple things. It's always really simple things. So in my opinion, I think that the biggest sort of sets of things that you'll see are like, there's ports that are being open to services that have forgotten about, or there's old subdomains pointing to things they forgot exist. They've SSL certificates, stuff like that, that are just giving away internal information. Things like breach passwords being out there as well. There's a bunch of these sort of things floating around, and it's always really simple things like this. It's the same with web applications as well. You'll find lots of really simple flaws poking around in bespoke web applications, and it's always simple things that are just barely overlooked. And I think the thing that drives that more or less is that organizations who are or at least trying to be proactive about their security, typically the approach they'll take is this inside-out approach. They've got this kind of tunnel vision on the things that they already have. So it's like, okay, bust out the asset register, bust out the server list or whatever, bust out, you know, whatever stuff we have internally, services. Okay, are these things secure? Tick the box. Okay, yeah, we're all good. Cool. But the reality is they're not really taking a look at their infrastructure from the outside in. They're not really looking at it from an attacker's perspective. And on top of that, like I mentioned earlier, when it comes to training for like standing up these services or developing an application or whatever, not necessarily security focused. So you end up missing like major resources that could have a huge impact on what you're creating simply because it wasn't a focus initially. One of my favorite things to point to is, I think it's the Microsoft Server Best Practices for Security, something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head, but Microsoft put out this like massive list of policies you can push out internally across your environment. And it mitigates so many attacks. It's not funny. And any sysadmin who is following those best practices will have basically won half the battle, really, if someone's in their environment. But again, it comes down to like these simple things. It's not even things that are outside of comprehension either. It's just things that are just outside of focus, you know?
Yeah, I know. And I guess that this is probably what we've subtly touched on around the mindset that, again, security people think from a security perspective and developers think like a dev and functionality. So I sort of wonder then maybe how do we sort of bring the two together? And I know this is not an easy answer and I guess it's like talk to the other team and I guess that seems obvious. But in reality, it's hard to do that, right? Like when I was working as a practitioner myself and it's like, oh, I've got to go talk to the business or I've got to talk to the dev and tell them that this is what's going on. Like it was a hard conversation. And people, this is going back almost a decade ago, they just didn't like you. They're like, oh, I don't want to have to talk to you. You're going to hold my project up. Oh, you're going to charge me all this money that I don't have in my budget. So those conversations are really hard to navigate. But unfortunately, it's the only way we are going to create this convergence between developers and security practitioners. Do you have any sort of advice you can add to that? And I guess, like I said, it's not an easy answer, but it's more so just having a discussion and hearing your thoughts with your role and your experience.
Yeah, so one of the things that I think is extremely important when it comes to this is I think what you'd probably find is most people that got into security got into it because they really love the space. They have this Hollywood vision around it and that is the whole thing's romanticized, right? And I think it's similar for developers. You'll see them coming into this space because it was this romanticized sort of thing. They love the challenges. They love being really clever at making these problems go away and creating things that other people would use. I think it's really similar for IT people as well. They love being able to stand up this infrastructure that people rely on every single day. They love being able to solve everyone's problems and have this like big overwhelming sort of impact on an organization. So I think the most important thing there is you've got all of this passion across all of these sort of places and channeling that or trying to get those teams to see those other disciplines in the same way that the people in those disciplines see them. I think that'd be pretty important because for me, if I want to get someone like a layman or something like that interested in security, I'm not going to sit there and start talking about the specifics of an exploit or something like that. Or I'm not going to tell them about the five things they should do to protect themselves from the evil internet. Man, I'm going to start talking to them about really cool hacker stories and stuff like that. I'm going to bust out the lock picks and be like, do you know how easy it is to bust open a padlock? You know, that's the sort of stuff that gets people excited and makes me go, wow, this is really cool. And it makes it look approachable as well. And I think from that development perspective, it's a matter of going and talking to the IT team and being like, hey, I know you guys are doing some scripting stuff. Have you seen what an API is? Check out this cool stuff that I can do with this, yada, yada, yada. Get them just as excited. And likewise, from an IT team's point of view, because I think there is a lot of IT skill lacking in some of the modern security professionals as well. But I think from an IT team's point of view, it's about approaching the security teams and being like, check this out. Did you know that you can do all this crazy stuff with virtual machines or you can do this really awesome networking stuff, yada, yada, yada. It's about, I think, trying to inspire that same passion that you've got in yourself, whether it's like an overwhelming sort of, I want to change my career or whatever, I think that's pretty irrelevant, but just sort of getting them to see it from your point of view, getting them to understand why you think this is cool. really. Ultimately, my goal whenever it comes to getting someone excited about security is just get them to see it as being as cool as I think it is, you know?
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. So do you think as security practitioners, maybe you mentioned before like the specifics of an exploit, right? Do you think this is where people in our world miss the mark? Because it's like, oh, you lost me, dude. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And do you think that comes back to an awareness about who are you talking to and the discourse in which you communicate to that person in, for example?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's about trying to find facets of your discipline that are really approachable to the layman. So I think if you're talking about security, something that's really approachable is like, is talking about, I don't know, stealing money from a bank, right? It's got that direct parallel with the old heist movies, stuff like that. But it totally is. It does come down to language, because I think one of the troubles is you'll find lots of people just glaze over and they'll have 100%. Lost you. And that's it. Yeah. So I think it's about trying to understand just how much context you will need to give to some of this understanding, and also trying to find those common grounds where there's already a bit of context to stand on. So like I mentioned with developers, most sysadmins or whatever, they'll be writing scripts, they'll understand some basic dev stuff, but using that common ground, a developer could easily try and stand on that and be like, have you seen these things that are related to that? So I think there definitely is some self-awareness that needs to be had when it comes to talking about these things. I still struggle with it sometimes, but I think that is something that people do need to keep an eye on, as well as trying to find that common ground if you really are trying to inspire that elsewhere.
So why do you think that's the case? Like, why do people do that? Obviously, having an awareness is one thing, but just say like you have the awareness, but you still do it. You still default to just going and talking about the specifics of an exploit, like straight up, which then gets the eyes glazing, you know, people rolling their eyes, people falling asleep. Why are people doing this though?
Yeah, I think that there's probably two reasons for this. So that would be, you've got the fact that most people who are doing this professionally, they're speaking in these sort of terms all day long, every day. It's literally their job. So it's like a default in your brain that you'll click to. I think I remember I had a high school teacher years ago who said to me that most people have a vocabulary of however many thousand words, and then per industry they pick up throughout their life, they'll end up picking up a specific vocabulary of something like another 1,500 words or something like that. And when you default to reaching to those words and talking about these concepts, etc., I think it becomes really easy to overestimate someone's ability to understand you, especially when you're talking to like-minded people all day long.
Okay, and what about the second sort of reason that you think that people default to doing this?
So I think the second reason is it's probably a little bit more malicious intent or ego-driven, and that is the doublespeak sort of aspect, being able to say things and know that someone, like being aware that someone doesn't understand you for the sake of feeling like they think that you're really clever or something like that, because these are complicated things. So I feel like that's probably, to some degree, the second aspect, because I know egos are a huge thing in every industry, really, but it is something that I think will only ever hinder these sort of conversations and these sort of understandings from coming across.
So if you had to lean on, is it number one as the default or number two, which one would you sort of lean more against that people in terms of commonly fall back on? Would you say it's just more so that they're speaking in the terms every day, so it's a lack of awareness, or do you think it's more ego-driven? If you had to sort of pick one or the other, which one would you pick?
Oh, number one, for sure. For sure, number one. I'll find myself talking to my missus, and I'll say something like, yeah, so-and-so opened up a port to this SMB server, and then I'll be like, a remote desktop connection. I'll have to like catch myself, and it's good because she'll call it out pretty often as well. Like that made no sense to me, Ryan. But I think it definitely is a number one thing, because what is it? Hanlon's razor, you're better off assuming someone's ignorant than you are assuming they're malicious.
So true. So I just want to hold that point there for a second, Ryan. You made a very interesting comment saying, I catch myself doing it. So either your partner calls you out or you're aware of it. How did you sort of condition yourself into doing it? Was it sort of just people calling you out saying, hey, Ryan, what the hell are you talking about? Or were you sort of mindful of it yourself, which then has made you go, oh, I know that I'm sort of maybe not explaining myself to someone who doesn't get what I'm talking about. I now need to change the vernacular that I use. I'm curious to hear how people that are listening can start to condition their sort of way of interacting with outside people out of cybersecurity, for example?
I think one of the best things to do is to try and find someone who has that sort of layman perspective on your industry, have these conversations with them, but also say out loud to them, like, any of this is flying over your head, call it out. Or if you don't want to talk about this anymore, that's perfectly fine. And I think what you'll find is just the act of saying that will also sort of make it click in your head. Not only that, but when you don't notice that you're doing it and you don't go and correct yourself, you'll have someone calling it out to you like, yeah, that didn't make any sense. Because I think a lot of times we assume a lot of context as well. So if you assume that the person understands the bigger picture or some of the underlying things that you're talking about that your entire conversation hinges on, then you're going to have most of what you're saying flying over their head. So yeah, I think it's more or less catching yourself. I am by no means a psychologist, but I think it's like cognitive behavioral therapy, where you're looking at your behaviors and acknowledging them, understanding them, and then trying on the spot to improve them. And as a result, you'll eventually stop doing them.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting, because I think, you know, part of having the interview is to actually extract sort of insights that people can sort of carry away. Because it's one thing to say, oh, having the awareness, but how do you do that? So I think you raise really great points. And maybe talking to people, whether it's your partner or whoever, that doesn't really know what you're talking about, for them to say, hey, like, what do you mean by that? I think is a great exercise for people to start doing, because it is like a muscle, right? Like, even in my field, I have to constantly re-educate people on like what different terms are, for example, because no one knows that. And it's not because people are stupid, it's just because it's not their world. But you mentioned something before around calling it out. How do you sort of find, like, if you're like a cybersecurity champion, for example, you go to the business or you go to the devs and you say, okay, like, you're doing a brown bag session, and then it's like, call it out, put your hand up if you don't understand what I'm saying. Do you think it's hard for people to like put their hand up? Because I always feel like an idiot if I'm like, oh, it's me. But usually nothing draws a crowd like a crowd. So if one person puts their hand up, another 10 people will as well. But it's always hard to be that first person, because you still just feel dumb. Like, I don't know what on earth this guy's going on about. Yeah. I should put my hand up, but I'm super reluctant to do that.
Yeah, I think when it comes to, say, you're running a session or something like that, one of the things I like to do at the end of sessions is, rather than just have a questions sort of session where you're like, okay, so does anyone have any questions? Did you all understand that? I think you're better off having a, like, opening up the floor a little bit and being like, does anyone have any stories around this? Does anyone have any examples where they've seen something like this that I've been talking about before? And bonus points, even picking on people directly and being like, oh, so now that we're at the tail end, I was just trying to inspire some conversation. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick on each and every one of you individually and ask you to say a little piece about blah. Even if you're just directing that at feedback, for instance, so saying, for instance, asking them individually, like, what did you learn about this session? What was tricky about this session? I think the thing is, while people are sitting there and they're thinking to themselves, oh, yeah, crap, there's some things that I didn't understand. I feel a bit embarrassed. I don't want to look dumb. Seems that everyone else seems to have understood this. There's also a bit of onus on whoever's leading the presentation as well. Because whoever's leading the presentation is like, you've got the power to directly pull people into the conversation. And that alone does feel a little bit daunting as well, but it's a be brave sort of situation. But that being said, from that dev point of view, I think there's a lot of stigma around not knowing or feeling dumb in the moment, etc. And the problem is we really look down on, or at least we have this common perception that it's bad to not know, it's bad to not understand. But the reality of the situation is, by being that person who puts your hand up, the way you look to everyone else in the room is you look like the bravest person in the room, for one. And for two, you're actually looking like someone who actually is interested, actually is engaged, actually wants to learn this thing and understand it correctly. So I don't feel like there's any harm in doing so, but yeah, I think it comes down to a personal be brave type situation, you know?
Yeah, and I guess it's hard. Like I said, like, I've always been like, oh, I don't want to put my hand up. I don't want to hit the dumb one. And then someone else does, then you're sort of a little bit more inclined. But then also onus is on the facilitator to be like, this is how I'm going to run this session. Or else it's like, all right, any questions? All right, no one puts their hands up, because you give people 5 seconds before you move on to the next thing. Like, it's just not enough time to really sort of educate people on that. But I understand what you're saying. Like, you know, even I feel dumb interviewing people. I had some really incredible people on this show, including yourself, Ryan, that sometimes like I have to really draw it out of people as well. And I've worked in the field myself before. So even I have to say, okay, so what do you mean when you say that term specifically? Which I guess really teases it out of people. They're like, oh, like I just had that sort of preconceived knowledge that you or your listeners had this assumption. So I think that those are the things that perhaps people listening don't always understand everything that the interviewee is talking about. So I guess the onus is on me as a facilitator to be able to have those conversations to ensure that, okay, now we all know, you know, what we're dealing with and the context behind it. And I think just by habit, we don't always like to over-explain ourselves because maybe we feel like we're over-talking a point or perhaps people already know the point that I'm making. So yeah, I guess it's hard and it's one of those learned skill sets that people need to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it contributes so much to personal development to pick up. And don't get me wrong, I'm not fantastic at this either. I have definitely given it a lot of thought in recent years though, having done more presentations and whatnot. And yeah, I think it's be dumb, feel dumb. It's a good thing. Likewise, when you're calling things out for the sake of other people. Absolutely. It's a useful thing to be doing. It brings a lot of clarity to everyone else around.
So I want to focus now on insecurity. We talk about like doing the basics, right? A lot of, if you type that in, there's a lot of things that come up on Google about the basics on security or ASD Essential 8 or whatever it is. But doing basic stuff is super hard, right? Like, you know, doctors are always like, oh, are you drinking enough water? Like, seems basic and water's free out of a tap. You don't really have to work so hard for it, but yet people still struggle with that. So again, it sort of reinforces my point on doing the basics is hard. Like, do you have any sort of comments on this?
Yeah, the basics aren't a focus. I think it ties back into what we were talking about earlier. You have these teams with very specific focuses, and then you have these weird security overlaps that are just outside of that. And so you don't have like this huge focus on going back and doing the basics. That example I gave you earlier with the Microsoft Server security best practices, that's hard to implement. It's really easy. It's all there. It's ready to go. Bang, turn it on and you're off. But how many knock-on problems are you going to create? How much change control are you going to need for that? That's huge. And when you've got a project in flight to implement whatever, or you've got however many users with problems with these things that need to be resolved, like you've got your workload already, and to go and do that additional proactive stuff, you need to initially know that it's there and you would need to know what kind of priority it holds. So I think one of the major things you'll find around a lot of these basic security things is there's no urgency or understanding of risk even around them. It's not until something's happened that an organization is jumping on top of things left, right, and center and making it happen right there and then. It'll typically be they'll sit there for years and years and years just forgotten about even. So there is no urgency. There's no understanding of the risk behind that, especially if you're not, you know, actually keeping an eye on these things. I think the other thing there is that ties in really closely with the exposure that these teams outside of security are getting to security. So again, like my example is pointing back to the training that they're doing. So I don't think MCSA had a huge amount on security. I don't think that like CCNA, for instance, so just some of the major certificates out there, I don't think they have a huge security exposure there. And as a result, like there's no exposure to that. Bonus points, if you haven't really attacked anything, if you haven't really played with security tools, if you haven't seen what they do, how they do it, etc., again, you don't really have the exposure to understand where those basics would really help. And I think on top of that, you've got your workloads already. So it ties directly into how much work you're doing, where you're doing it. Like I said, if you have projects in flight, like you're not really going to care about what could be 2 months of implementing best practices. You've got problems that are like directly in your face. I find a lot of IT teams will find themselves just firefighting all day long. And that is, you know, internal user problems or trying to make a certain thing or trying to stand a certain thing up for the organization on time to deliver a project. So yeah, it's there's a lack of priorities and urgency, which I think really just stems from that understanding of risk.
So how do we get people excited about the basics? Because we can't miss the basics. And yes, they're basic. And yes, they're mundane and they're trivial in people's mindset. But going back to my water analogy, like drinking water, yep, seems basics hard. So what do people like to do to make it exciting? They put infused water with lemon, or they drink sparkling water to encourage them to be a bit more excited about drinking the water. So how do we put the lemon in the water for basic security?
That's a really good question. This is me personally, and this is simply because I got into this because I really do enjoy this a lot. But for me, I love remediating environments. I love doing the patching stuff, etc., simply because I enjoy attacking that sort of stuff just as much, right? I know that I'm closing these sort of holes. And that might sound mundane. That might sound borderline. That might sound borderline OCD.
Obsessive.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah, it's for me, that was more or less the point of it. But I think also taking a look internally at where the organizations, where their priorities sit overall. Whenever I've delivered a project or I've built some infrastructure and delivered that to a client, like there's this immense feeling of just self-accomplishment. And I think if you're putting down these security projects and these remediations, etc., as that sort of project gearing, again, you're going to have a sense of accomplishment coming out of it. Like I have made 1,000 vulnerabilities turn into nothing. We have an infrastructure that is like substantially better than it was. And while this is something that typically you'd see, I don't know, your boards or your C-levels, whatever, staring at going, okay, yes, good, we're investing in the right places. I think there's something to be taken away from that for the more operational staff as well who are actually executing this.
Yeah, I know. And I guess it's, again, it's a hard question to answer because, again, it's about having these discussions, getting maybe some inspiration from things that work for you and your experiences and drawing on those and then sort of applying certain lenses to your organization saying, okay, well, this can work and this can't work. But just something that I often hear with the amount of interviews I've conducted now, people saying it's about the basics. But yeah, I get that. But again, that's still not easy thing to do and to implement. So I'd like to maybe understand, from your perspective, Ryan, as a leader, like how would you sort of employ like more of a security mindset? Now, I know that we've sort of talked about this and we've peppered the conversation, but I want to maybe get some hard points to sort of leave our interview with today. So to employ a security mindset to IT teams and to conversely, how would you engender an IT mindset to security practitioners? And there was a lady I interviewed a while back and she said, security people talk about learning security, but to the business, do security people understand how the business makes money? And still a lot of people don't really know that answer. So I think it's looking at it from both perspectives. So I'm really keen to hear your sort of thoughts around what advice that people can sort of take away from today's interview.
Yeah. So I think for IT teams, like trying to get that security mindset there, hack the planet, man. Hack things. Learn what it is. Play with it. 12-year-olds in Russia watch YouTube videos and then go and own infrastructure. I think for some people in IT that I've spoken to, and even previous colleagues who I know are like extremely adept, you'll start talking to them about security and they have it in their head that it's this really tricky, hard thing. But there are so many parallels, it's not funny, between what you're doing already. So you've already got this huge basis to stand on. And not to mention like some of the platforms that are out there, they're straight up labs where you're hands-on and you're doing it immediately. It's awesome. And the amount of exposure that you get from that, the amount of understanding you'll get just from playing around with these things, it's huge. On top of that, once you've got that, then you'll start seeing things all over the place while you're working. You'll start seeing some context behind some of the vulnerabilities that are out there. You'll start seeing misconfigurations on servers where you're like, oh, there's privilege escalation there. Oh, that's cool. You could probably use that to get a domain admin if you want it. Conversely, you'll be fixing things as you go and you'll be enjoying it. So I totally believe that you should just give it a go, have a play. It's not hard. It's fun. It's pretty approachable as well. And for the most part, yeah, it can be pretty cool. As for the opposite side of the spectrum, so people who are in security but don't really have all that IT exposure, etc., or don't have that infrastructure exposure, do what the IT people are doing, man. Go out, buy yourself a home lab, stand it up at home, install VMware, whatever. Play around with some of the cool apps that are out there. Stand yourself up like a Plex server, Medius, or whatever. Just have fun with it. You learn by doing, and you only really learn things you enjoy, right? So for me, it's about finding a way to enjoy these things. My best analogy, I think I must have been 14 or 15 at the time, and I had someone who was running local gaming lands around Sydney. He rocked up to my house with a virtual server, and he was like, here you go. Can you set up some game servers on this thing? I'd never touched it before in my life, but I love playing games and I love setting up game servers. So I was like, yeah, let's figure this out. So it's about finding those ways to just make this fun. It's like you said earlier, you put the lemon in the water, right? It's about trying to identify what that is for you, what the facets of that are for you, and understand that just by playing around, just by getting in and amongst this, you're going to come out the other end with a lot of skills that are super applicable to what you're doing already. In terms of the business side of things, like that quote that you mentioned earlier, and that is, do security people really understand how organizations are making their money? The fact of the matter is security is, it's super tricky to justify a security investment. It's super tricky to try and make these things happen at work. I personally do a lot of this in my own time. A lot of the people I work with do a lot of this in their own time. Not for the organization's benefit, but for our benefit. It is mutually beneficial nonetheless. But these are just things that we love and that we do and that we're passionate about. I wouldn't want to sell my time to an organization 5 days a week, majority of my week, if I didn't actually enjoy the things that I was doing in that time anyway. So I think it makes sense to have that sort of passion and nurture that. But I think from an organizational point of view, it does also make sense to try and implement this culture internally, to try and have this culture of people are really excited about these sorts of things internally. Because you'll see teams coming together and building this culture around doing cool stuff, whether it's outside of work, inside of work, etc. It doesn't have to be at the expense of a department's budget either. It can be. And there's some things that are really cheap for doing that. For instance, like I said, some of the platforms that are out there for training, they're nothing in the grand scheme of things for the amount of knowledge that it would impart on staff members. The time investment there as well, it's not huge either. I would probably anticipate it wouldn't have a major effect on, you know, operations or IT to, you know, have people having a play around with these things at work. But that being said, it is also about being conscious of the fact that most security investments are seen as just a money pit, more or less. It's really hard to communicate a return on investment in security things. So you're not really always going to be able to play with the latest and greatest and over secure everything to death. Likewise with IT and infrastructure, you get a budget and you can pick 3 out of 5 things that you want to get done in the next year. It just is what it is when it comes to organizations and work. But yeah, I think that passion is something that you really do need to foster while you're doing this.
100%. I think there's great points and tangible ones as well. And you mentioned before Hack the Planet. Were you referring to the movie The Hackers with Angelina Jolie? That's I haven't seen that in years, actually. Now I feel like inspired to go and watch it.
Yeah, likewise. I haven't seen it, maybe 5, 10.
I remember that. That was awesome. Phone freaking. So yeah, if you're interested in security, check it out. It's a great movie. It's an old movie, but it's a good one. And it's an original hacking movie. So that was awesome. Really appreciate your time today, Ryan. I think you really gave honest, real and raw sort of view into your world, your experience. And I think these are the experiences that I want to bring on the show for people to have more awareness about what they're doing and perhaps take some insights from yourself and start to apply them in their own organization. So I really appreciate your time for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by Mercsec, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit mercsec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.